This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Jikoji, here, there, and everywhere. It's wonderful to be together, and I really appreciate your practice this morning, both in the small zendo in here. I mentioned that in the small zendo, it felt like we dropped an anchor. We were on the boat, we're moving, and then the anchor dropped. And I felt it again in the large zendo. So that's a very lovely way to practice. So thank you. I want to call attention to the fact that Jikoji, this temple, rests on the land of the Ohlone people. They are the native people. They are the original people who inhabited the Bay Area, actually the whole Bay Area, for more than 10,000 years. So we express our gratitude and appreciation to the Ohlone. We acknowledge our thankfulness as a developing process of recognition, and that we are all immigrants in this country, on this land. And we acknowledge our present participation in making a recognition of the first people here at this particular place and here and now. So for those of you who look at our website, you might have seen the subject for today's talk says, the subject is trust. Excuse me, sorry. I promise you I'm not choking on the subject. So a few days ago, I asked one of you what I should speak about today. What is really alive in her practice? What's kind of the bleeding edge, the place of vulnerability, the very vibrant, alive, maybe scary place in her practice? And she said one word, trust. Trust happens to be an incredibly important part of our practice. So today, I hope we can talk about trust. By the way, the word trust has the same root as the word true, unsurprisingly. From the Middle English, true, I don't know exactly how to pronounce it, or from Old English, trore, I'm making up the pronunciation. And that would mean faithful, akin to Sanskrit, daruna, which means hard, as in wood. Synonyms, of course, for trust are confidence, sometimes faith. So as we're about to dive into the deep waters of trust, I would like you all to take a big deep breath. Let it out. And I'll tell you a story as you just relax with that breath from the Chan tradition. For those of you who don't know, Zen is the Japanese pronunciation of the Chinese word Chan for Zen. Zen Chan. And this is a koan, which is from the Chinese tradition. It's case 23 from the Mumon Kan, which is a collection called the Gateless Gate, a collection of koans. And this teaching story is called Think Neither Good Nor Evil. This koan involves one of my favorite of our ancestors, the sixth ancestor, Weineng. By the way, the chant we did this morning, the Xin Shen Ming, that was written by our third ancestor, Seng Shan. So this is by the third ancestor. And the koan we're talking about today involves the sixth ancestor in our lineage. There is a sutra called the Platform Sutra, which tells the life of Weineng. And one piece of information that you might want to know about Zen in Weineng's lifetime, in his period, is that since Bodhidharma, the ancestor who's growling at you out there and growling at you on the poster outside, that ancestor is the ancestor who brought Zen or Chan or Buddha practice from India to China. So since the time of Bodhidharma, Zen was a very, very small kind of out there practice. And the way it was passed was teacher to teacher to student. There was only one lineage holder, a teacher. It was only one lineage holder in each lineage. So that's a piece of information you should know because there's drama in this koan. So Wei Ning was our sixth ancestor. He was an illiterate peasant working out in the world. And one day he heard someone chant a little phrase from the Diamond Sutra. And out of nowhere, he had a sudden, spontaneous enlightenment or awakening experience. The way I would describe a sudden enlightening experience is to say he had a very immediate and direct experience, nothing he'd read about or heard about, just his own experience of what we would now call non-duality, no good, no bad, for example. So this experience rocked his world, folks. And he went in search of a teacher, and someone, he asked, what was that? You were just chanting, and they told him, and he, where could I learn more? And they said, go, blah, blah, blah. So he went, blah, 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 blah. And he found Hongren. Hongren was his teacher. He found his temple. So he arrives at the monastery of the fifth patriarch, by the way, that's Hongren. He arrives at the monastery and Hongren sees him and says, he calls him a barbarian from the south. So he looked a little different to the people of the north and he called him a barbarian. And by saying that, he was also doubting his ability to achieve enlightenment. Wei Ning said that when he met the sixth ancestor, his teacher Hongren, when he met him that day, when he showed up, Hongren questioned him. And this is what Wei Ning actually writes about. The fifth patriarch, that's Hongren, asked me, who are you and what do you seek? Wei Ning, the illiterate peasant who's just been awakened, says, your disciple is a commoner from Jingzhu of Lingnan. Saying it all wrong, sorry, forgive me. I've traveled far to pay homage to you and to seek nothing other than Buddhahood. So the fifth patriarch says, you're from Lingnan, you're a barbarian. How can you expect to become a Buddha? And Wei Ning replied, although people exist as northerners or southerners, in the Buddha nature, there is neither north nor south. A barbarian differs from your holiness physically, but what difference is there in our Buddha nature? Isn't that wonderful? That he had the confidence to say his mind and heart to this very esteemed teacher. He says, hey, I'm you. You're me. We're everything. Pretty brave. Well, Hongren can't deny that this guy's got something going on. And he says, okay, you can stay. But you're relegated to pounding rice and chopping wood. Kind of the lowest temple duties, right? You know, grinding rice is just physical labor, chopping wood, just physical labor. So it's interesting. Hongren tells him, don't go into the Buddha hall. Stay away from the Buddha hall. Stay away. So there's a little foreshadowing there, and you'll find out why in just a minute. He just says, go to work. So after some months, Wei Ning demonstrates his understanding of the Dharma. There's actually this poetry contest. I've told you about it before. If you've been here before, I'm not going to tell you that story this week, but he wins. This illiterate guy wins the poetry contest. And Hongren recognizes him as his Dharma heir. He says, you're it. I'm giving you my robe. This is a kesa. It's a robe of a teacher. I'm giving you my bowls. These are the bowls that we beg with and we eat with. He was literally given his teacher's robe and bowl. And now he was the lineage holder in that lineage. He was given transmission to be a teacher. This uneducated peasant, this immigrant, was now the lineage holder. So this transmission, this ceremony where you become a teacher was done at night and secretively. because Huineng had so little status in the eyes of the other monks that Hongren thought his life might be in danger. So he said, after this transmission ceremony, you have to leave, and you have to leave now. Get out, take my robe, take my bowl, go back to southern China, teach. So he did so. He ran off in the night. A few days transpired, and the other monks found out what had happened. They were not happy. And they decided that this one monk, whose nickname was the General, not a good sign, right? His real name was Mio in the koan. I haven't even gotten to the koan. This is all background. But he's called the General because maybe he'd been in the army. But the thing that was very clear about him is he was strong. He was forceful. He may have been kind of fierce. And he was a great athlete. So Huineng has 3 or 4 days advance walking on this guy. But guess what? Mio goes after him to get back the bowls and the robe. And he catches up to him. Huineng sees him coming. He takes the bowls. Well, okay, I'm going to read you the koan. The patriarch, that's Huineng, he's going to be the guy we're talking about, seeing Mio, the general, running towards him, takes the robe and the bowls, and he puts them on a rock. And he says, this robe represents the faith. This robe represents the faith. It should not be fought over. If you want it, take it away. So Mio wants it. And he goes up and he tries to move it and he can't. He's stuck. It was heavy as a mountain, it says in the koan. Mio tried to move it, but it was as heavy as a mountain and would not budge. Faltering and trembling, he cried out, I came for the Dharma, not for the robe. I beg you, please give me your instruction. Huineng says to him, think neither good nor evil. At this very moment, Mio, what is the original self of this monk, Mio? At these words, Mio has his own sudden, direct enlightenment experience. It says his body was drenched with sweat. And he wept, and he bowed, and he said, besides the secret words and the secret meaning you have just revealed to me, is there anything deeper, deeper still? Still once more. And the patriarch, Huineng, says, what I've told you is no secret at all. When you look into your own true self, whatever is deeper is found right there. Mio said, I was with the monks under Obai, which is Hongren, the fifth patriarch. I was with the monks for many years, but I couldn't realize my true self. But now, receiving your instruction, I know it is like a man drinking water and knowing whether it is cold or warm. My brother, you are now my teacher. And Huineng says, if you say so, but let us both call Hongren our teacher and be mindful to treasure and hold fast to what you have attained. So I love this koan, not only because Huineng's in it, he's kind of one of my favorite peeps, but also because he's pointing to trust. Many of us have questions about trust. What does it mean to trust, for example, in the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha? The triple treasure. What does it mean to trust one another? What does it mean to trust in our intimate relationships? And this inquiry into trust, if you're brave enough to look, unfolds in all directions, not only from our closest relationships, but beyond that, to how our country relates to the world, how we relate to our planet, to the cosmos. So the Buddha had something to say about trust. In the Kalama Sutra, the Buddha advises a whole group of villagers, they're called the Kalamas, not to accept any teachings, including his own teachings, blindly. He tells them, don't accept these teachings, even what I'm saying, based on my authority or tradition, or even out of respect. Instead, the Buddha emphasizes a process of your own personal investigation and direct experience and to find the truth. These are the Buddha's words. This is what he said. Do not go upon what has been acquired by repeated hearing, nor upon tradition, nor upon rumor, nor upon what is in the scriptures, nor upon surmise, nor upon an axiom, nor upon specious reasoning, nor upon a bias toward a notion that has been pondered over, nor upon another's seeming ability, nor upon the consideration, well, that guy's our teacher, the monk is our teacher. Kalamas, when you know yourself, when you know these things are good, these things are not blamable, these things are praised by the wise, the undertaken and observed, these things lead to benefit and happiness, enter and abide on them. So the Kalamas, this group of villagers, they were confused because they were just a bunch of different people in different traditions coming through, preaching their version of how to deal with reality and suffering, and often criticizing the other teachers who are coming through, preaching their version of how to deal with suffering. And they turned to the Buddha, known for his wisdom and his compassion. And he basically said, do not believe. Do not believe something because it's been passed down through generations. Don't believe based on tradition. Don't believe because it's spoken or rumored to be true. Don't believe because the teachings are written down in the books. Don't believe because it's supported by logic, inference. Don't believe because it conforms to a particular political or ideological system. Don't believe because of the charisma of the speaker. Don't believe even out of respect for the Buddha. I think this pretty much wipes clean your opportunity of any which way giving away your agency and responsibility. And this is an important element of the trust of which we speak. Instead of relinquishing your agency to belief in something other than your own experience, the Buddha is telling us that after careful observation and analysis, when you yourself find something leads to the benefit and happiness of all beings, then you can accept it and you can live by it. By the way, I found a new word this week when I was researching this. It's called the Ehepasiko attitude. Has anybody ever heard that one? I hadn't either. It's from the Pali. Ehepasiko literally means go toward. I say go toward, you can translate as come. Go toward or come and see. This is an open invitation to explore. So the Buddha, the awakened one, is expressly encouraging the Kalamas, us, into a spirit of inquiry and critical thinking to promote personal responsibility, agency. Some years ago, when I was about to be ordained as a priest, right here in this room, I was like very concerned because I had never even seen a priest ordination. And I didn't know what I was getting into. I still don't know what I've gotten into. I felt the calling, of course, to serve the Sangha, to continue to study the Buddha way. But I had no idea what it meant to be a priest. And I felt as though I was saying yes to the unknown. Like, really? I'm agreeing to do this and I have no idea what it is. And it's public. There are other people here watching. So the day that I walked into my ordination ceremony, as we were just getting ready to walk down the path, I really felt completely naked. Isn't there a show called Naked and Afraid? Mm-hmm. I felt naked and afraid. I had never seen an ordination. I didn't know what to expect. And I asked my preceptor, Shoho Roshi, Can you tell me what to expect? And he said, no. This was actually a very profound moment for me. No. He wasn't mean about it. He just said no. And in that moment, I realized, of course, how could he tell me what I was about to experience? How could anyone tell me what I was about to experience, what it was going to mean to me? He was actually responding, I believe, in a very capacious and expansive way beyond just what it would mean to be in this next few moments, like what the ceremony was going to look like. He was telling me that he couldn't tell me anything about my life. How could he tell me anything about what I was about to undertake? And I remember saying aloud, I guess I have to trust. And he did say something, more than one word. He said, yeah, that's the point. Trust is the whole point. So I walked into this zendo dressed in the white kimono that Sokyo is wearing right now. She's wearing my lay robes. And underneath there is my kimono. That's all I was wearing. Actually, I had on top of me one of Kogun's silk jackets. I knew I had already fully accepted that trust is the way. I really didn't have a choice, although I was making a choice. I trusted myself to deal with what would come, no matter what it was. I trusted the Sangha to teach me. You're still doing that. And all of this has been tested by me, time and time and time again. And so I keep going forward in the way of the Buddha to undertake meeting this, what it is right now, with a deep trust. By telling us not to believe in him, the Buddha is pointing us to the truth that this trust must come from seeing the validity of one's own experience. The teachings might be calling you. I mean, I don't know why you're here today. Somebody decided to come up that mountain. Maybe they're calling you. You hear this distant temple bell. Maybe you hear the Han inviting you to find the truth within yourself through mindful awareness, ethical conduct, meditative insight, without blindly clinging to dogma or teachings. So when I stood outside this zendo about to walk in, there's a picture of me. I look terrified. It's my favorite picture. Because in that terror was this incredible trust or faith based upon my understanding that I was willing, a kind of confidence that this was the best way for me to go, a conviction paired with this open-minded sense of inquiry, curiosity. Well, we'll see. I have no idea what's about to happen. I could not deny the truth of my own experience. Everything in my life and my ancestors' life and my Sangha's life and my family's life that had led to that moment. And that's what I continue to do again and again. So returning to this koan, when Weinang asked Mio to think neither good or bad, he's asking Mio to drop these conceptual, this thinking way of separating things, right? Just like we read in the sutra today, the mind of absolute trust is beyond all thought. He's saying, drop it. Drop those dualities. Good and evil are examples of this dualistic thinking, categorizing our experience into this is good and this is bad. I like this. I don't like that. All of that, Weinang is saying, drop it, Mio. He's asking him to enter in a state of this awareness, just awareness of what's right in front of you right here and now. Not your ideas about it, not your opinions about it, just what's actually happening to you through your experience, through your eyes. He's guiding him to trust his own experience. Not even a blind trust in your own experience. You have to look at it and inquire, who is it that has this experience? And when Weineg asks Mio, at this very moment, what is the original face of Mio? He's using a common Zen metaphor, the original face. This is a metaphor for one's true nature before any kind of conditioning or ideas we have, or ego identities even. He points to the mind in its natural, open, undistorted state, free and clear, unbound by any labels about what you think you are. Instead of being an idea of yourself, you are being this moment. You are in this, you're inseparable from this moment. Your true self is not defined by roles, culture, beliefs, or identities. So Weining is prompting Mio and all of us still telling this story to be ready, to be aware of what this is. Remember, this guy's been chasing him down. He turns and faces him and says, what is this? Who are you? He's being shown through the illusion that there's anything that's me and you, the illusion of any kind of duality, of any kind of separation. He's being offered the door to grasp, to open up the real nature of reality beyond concepts and ideas. Just as it is, he's being offered an invitation to look at who he is, maybe what he is, and how he is. And this is often described in Zen as profound and wordless. So even with all these words, like Mio, we are called in this practice to shift our awareness away from this kind of intellectual categorizing of things, to stop trying to get something, and instead to direct ourselves to this immediate experience, this true nature of this here and now. To meet oneself, to meet this one as it is right now, requires you to experience deep trust in one's own process of meeting this moment. Kobun Chino Otogata Roshi, the founder of our temple, said this. Trust is the confidence that you have in yourself and in the environment to be able to do what needs to be done and to be who you are. It's like trusting yourself as if you were already dead. You are just being lived by something other than yourself, and you completely trust that. Kobun Roshi is pointing us to a surrender to the flow of all of life. He's telling us that deep trust transcends this one's need, this ego's need for control. And it opens us to a place of intimate, I would say vast connection with this present moment, which includes everything. For Kobun, I believe trust was not just a personal trait that you would call mine, but a state of being fully present with the unfolding of life. In all of our relationships, My experience is that trust does not need to be earned. It's already here. We should be confident in the unfolding of this in our lives. So along with all the characters in our lives here today at Jikoji, all of you beautiful faces, and also Weining and his teacher Hongren, and Myo, the general, and the Buddha, and Kobun, and Shoho, all of these people in our stories today, I want to encourage you, I do encourage you, to engage with the Buddha's teachings and practices, and to find out for yourself, to cultivate your wisdom. We don't need another one of me, God knows. We need you. And we don't need a duplicate of your boss or your friend or someone else you admire. We need you. Cultivate your own wisdom. The whole point is trust. Thank you for listening. So it's your turn. You may ask questions about anything. How's that? Yes. Speak really loudly so everyone can hear you, please.
Yeah, so really thank you for the talk about trust. I'm also curious, like in the real life where like life hustles around, something happens, sometimes a lot of uncertainty happens in the life. And at some point, this is talking about my personal experience, I feel anxiety, I feel I'm not making the right choice for my life. And in that situations, I can kind of feel like I cannot trust myself in that moment. So I just wonder like how can all this, all the learnings we have today to guide people back to retrust themselves and like, yeah, I just staying what I experienced before.
Thank you. So a really important question he's asking. I love the way you asked the first part, but in real life, in real life, with all of its pressures and all of the distractions and all the mistakes we may have made in the past, we don't want to make any more mistakes. And sometimes I lose confidence in my sense of, is this the right choice? How do we return to trust? It's a very important question. I don't know how to answer it for you. I trust you to find that answer. And I would say that in my experience, in my own life, the trust is already there. It's not gone. What I would recommend, what works for me, your mileage may vary, is to slow down. And I don't mean slow down and take 6 months to make a decision unless you have that luxury in real life. But I mean, slow down. Give this one some generosity. I would like you to treat yourself the way you would treat me. Talk to yourself that way. You would tell me, okay, you're not sure. I recognize, I see this. I observe that I'm not sure. Just like when you're sitting in meditation, you observe. There's that thought, there's that feeling, there's that idea, but not, it's me, it's me, it's me. Just there it is. With a little bit of spaciousness around this, with a little generosity towards your own process, you'll find it. It's right there. And you'll know it because it feels wholesome. You may still have doubts about, I don't know how this is going to play out in 30 years, right? Nobody knows that, my friend. You put your whole heart and mind and body into it, okay? Just, this is what I'm doing. I don't know what the karma, the repercussions of this will be, but it feels wholesome. It feels like it's the best I can do right now. I'm okay with it. I will go with it until it's something else arises. Yeah. One of my sons, I have two grown adult, brilliant, wonderful, beautiful sons. And one of them used to be really kind of, I almost paralyzed in making decisions because he wanted to do right. You have to be able to see right as this big, vast field with lots of flowers of goodness. And you can pick any one of them and it'd be okay. And the truth is this trust, the fundamental sense of this trust, what's your name?
Seth.
The fundamental sense of this trust, your own experience of it will be that, okay, I'm doing my very best. And no matter what happens, I'll go with it. Those decisions that you have decided were not good in the past and, you know, you don't want to make that mistake again. They were good actually for you, right? They helped you define, don't want to do that. They were a gift. People get hurt. You got hurt. Life wasn't what you expected. This is how we learn. It's not bad. So this trust allows you to make decisions knowing you're doing your very best and that you will meet it. Whatever happens, you will take full responsibility and meet it and adjust. We do this all the time. Some of us live here all the time. We're adjusting all the time. Well, that's not, we made changes in our program as of this morning at 8:15, just the way we moved you around, little tiny things. We're adjusting because, well, that might not be so easy for them. Let's try this. Can you just dance and have a kind of basic radical acceptance that you are doing your best and you are. Does that help? Okay. Thank you, Sam. May we all do that, by the way. Me too. Yes.
Thank you for your talk. I have this contradiction.
Hey, speak up really loud because they need to hear you. Thank you.
Like, if we are not able to judge right or wrong, good and evil, and we trust the system or to trust the process or trust myself in the process, and if the process turns out to be bad for me, for example, you know, one can be in a bad relationship, one can be in a difficult work environment, you know, how do you trust and just let it happen?
No, it's very important, because what you're saying is, how do I not be a victim of my own trust?
That's right. And at some point, you have to take a choice. And at some point, the analysis has to be done, whether this is bad for me, this is good for me. So in that case, you're actually...
Hey, absolutely. And what's your name?
Shauna.
Well, I want to say this is not blind trust either, right? Not believing in the Buddha and believing in yourself, like, okay, I can do anything, I'm good, and it won't have its repercussions. That's not true. He's saying, inquire. He's not saying, let me say about this good and wrong, right and wrong, that there is no absolute good, right and wrong, right? In any context, before I had children, I said I would never be able to hurt a flea. But I had a child and I would have killed somebody if they messed with that child. I mean, I remember in the hospital thing, I would kill somebody over this. And I, you know, me? Yeah, me. This person would absolutely rip a head off if they hurt my child. So obviously there's no absolute right and wrong, right? But in any given instance, it's your job to take responsibility for what you think is wholesome. And I'm using this word wholesome liberally because you know it. You know it when you see it, when you feel it. Something feels yucky about a decision, don't do it. Give it more time. Something feels, okay, I've looked at this body and mind. It feels like it's not going to harm me and therefore will not harm others. Can't just do me. The whole world, you're related to it all, like Wei Ning and you. And I will go forward in this path because it's wholesome. And then I will deal with what comes next. Fair? Okay. So this trust is not, it's not dumb trust. It's informed trust, where you actually have to inquire yourself, is this just my habit that I like, especially relationships? That's a great example. Thank you. Because many of us have entered into relationships and we niggling little boys going, this seems familiar. I wonder if I've done this before. Pay attention. Listen, trust that voice. It's the whole universe telling you, hey, pay attention. There's something here for you to learn about yourself, and you are liberated from your suffering if you're willing to look. Look. Anybody else? Anybody else?
Randy.
Jelly roll, Randy. Yeah, I haven't forgotten, Rand.
I don't think you ever will. Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear him? Okay.
Yeah. You know, as changes come into our life unexpectedly and things you don't really expected, the one Buddhist thing that kept coming back to me the last few days is Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Mm-hmm. So whatever happens, I'm not going to be terrified. I'm going to move on with my life and what I need to do. But I've had some real yo-yo times the last few days emotionally. And others have too. But the thing of Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Life is the great teacher. That's I've always looked at, you know, Buddhism is about life. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. It's about living. And so I'm you know, it's sort of like I'm affirming I need to head into this new reality with what I have in myself and move on. So it's been a good little mantra for me. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. And I don't know why, it's popped up and it stayed with me.
Dharma gates are boundless. I vow along with you to trust. To trust. Thank you, Randy.
Yeah.
That was the bell. So we're going to end now with go ahead. And the chant is also on the same page?
Nope, it's on page 3, on the top of page 3.
I want to thank you all for your practice here today. Thank you for coming to Jikoji.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.